That's about it. And then I just sort of wrote a little statement about the notion of voting, which I may have touched on before. Do I have any time?
2 minutes.
Okay. I'll read this because I don't remember what I said. Voting by members versus voting by listeners. Whether members or listeners vote has nothing to do with whether WBAI will be vulnerable to a hostile takeover attempt. The invaders will either call in for their subscriptions or they will call in for their ballots. There is no way of stopping either. However, limiting the number of seats up for election can block any takeover attempt, as I described earlier. But allowing all listeners to vote, which is really allowing anyone to vote, would diminish the status and the importance of being a member. We are really not all equal in the context of Pacifica. Some of us are supporters, members, and some of us are not listeners, listeners that have not subscribed. It is very easy to downplay the act of subscribing, but in fact it is a very significant act, a meaningful act, and it should not be taken for granted. We need to get many more listeners to subscribe. That is, I think, the top priority for the survival of WBAI and the survival of Pacifica. And I'll tell you why, because I know a lot of people who gave more money than they really could have in the last fund drive, and like I'm basically drained out. I'm not going to be able to give a penny in the next fund drive, and I think there are a lot of people like me. The only way we're going to get over that is by getting a lot more people to give a smaller amount. Can I just read three more sentences? Okay. We need to do everything possible to motivate listeners to subscribe, to persuade them to subscribe. And making membership a requirement for voting in Pacific elections is one way to do this. Become a member and vote in the lab elections in December. That is a very strong selling point for membership. And it would be foolish to cast it aside in order to let the 25 people out there, and that's all there are. There's only 25 people out there who are listening, who are not subscribers, who want to vote. And if you want to throw out this argument and this tool to bring in more listeners, I think you're really making a very, very foolish step. You're doing something very, very foolish and counterproductive.
Okay. At this point, we had decided that if we had started on time, meaning 6:30, we would have questions, and if we did not start on time, we would not have questions. However, we're a bunch of grown-ups here. We can decide ourselves what we feel is the most useful way of doing it. So can I see a show of hands? How many of you would prefer to take questions from the speakers at this point rather than breaking down into small groups and then discussing the issues? How many people are in favor of that?
We need a lot of clarity on
stuff. It's either or?
Well, it looks like at this point, okay, so you mean what, you're suggesting that we do both?
Yeah.
Well, okay, what is being suggested that we would take some questions and leave time still for people to break into other groups and still discuss the issues and different comparisons that were made?
Yes.
Is there, can I see some hands for that? Didn't count. Now, we have to take another vote. Now, the third option is to go right now to what we had decided earlier and break into groups and discuss, you know, separately. Okay. Oh. Okay, four. Minority. Okay. So at this point, it seems that it's very clear that the majority, a small majority of the people decided that they would take questions. Yes. So, Mimi? Well, there's no mic. Yes, okay, absolutely. I'll give you a number.
And let's set a time limit for the questions. It's
18. You want to come over? Bethel? Yes. The group that wanted to keep to the original plan had like four people.
No. There were two other possibilities. Have questions and then break into groups, or to just have questions. What was the vote? I can't see what the
vote was. Well, I can count it again. The group. Okay, it was like there were maybe like 10 people who wanted to do what we're about to do now, and maybe 8 who wanted to just take questions. Do both. Okay, yeah. Can people want the question? No, actually, I was just going to take for that, I see. Okay. I was going to give people numbers for questioning, but since for the sound system, it's better to actually come physically. Well, I was going to say that here. If people feel like doing this, and that's what they want to do, that's what they feel this is learning experience for them, I'm willing to do it. If the majority wants to do it, I would do that. I mean, this is not kindergarten. It's a small majority seat. So why don't we do some of it, and then let's take another vote after. Okay.
Okay. Ray, let's stop voting, and let's say that
we're not voting anymore.
Let's say that we're going to have questions for 15 minutes, and then let's break into groups, period.
So please do try to ask questions and limit your question comment to 1 minute, up to 1 minute. Can you feel that?
And don't make a statement. Ask a question, please. No, don't make a statement. Ask a question. It's a question and answer period. Don't speechify, please.
Anyway, folks, please, can I ask any of the presenters or to all of them?
Okay. My name is Liz McClellan. I'm actually from the KPFA Signal area. I've been listening for about... My name is Liz McClellan. I came from the KPFA Signal area right before the coup. I had nothing to do with it, I swear. and arrived to find the same horrible thing happening here and got further involved. My concern or question for Mimi and the constituency model, I guess, is what we're calling it, is when we talk about... understanding there's a difference between a rank and file labor organization and their leadership, and looking at, say, the split that happened around the Seattle coalition after 9/11 and the leadership of the labor movement essentially breaking off in a pro-war stance in support of Bush after Seattle, when we thought about this great, you know, quote, environment label coalition. When we talk about reserve seats, who do you think is going to be on those seats but leadership? Leadership rather than rank and file members. I agree there needs to be a drive to get rank and file members to become members of BAI, absolutely. But when we talk about reserved seats, you know, will it be a rank and file member whose inclination may be to have stayed with the Seattle Coalition, or will it be a leadership whose position and affiliations have much more to do with the ruling class?
Thank you, Liz.
I'm talking much more about communities of interest. I am not talking again about a Julian Bond, who was one of the people who was picked, and if he had said no, well, he did say no, which is why Mary Frances Barry wound up. I'm talking about community of political interest. So right now you have nine clause, since you mentioned the anti-war movement, which is a very large and growing group, which consists of labor activists who are against the war, not the leadership. Oh, I'm sorry, there you are. Not the leadership of the bourgeois labor movement in some ways. So, again, to me the idea is if you have an African-American, a person of African descent, or a Latino, or a gay person, et cetera, and they represent only themselves, are we fulfilling our obligation to seek representation from oppressed groupings, or groupings that we want to become part of the power structure and changing things? So that's why I'm talking about whether it's departments, constituencies, or community of interest. And yes, there is a political involvement and criteria and representation that those individuals should have. So that, to me, becomes the greater safeguard so that you don't wind up with a John Murdoch, or you don't wind up with the concepts of somebody who's there merely by virtue of the actual election and has only bourgeois politics. Don't forget, many of our subscribers supported the Coosters.
Okay. Next, Fred, please be quick.
Sure. I'm short, you know. Okay, just a couple of comments. There's also a listener member proposal. So there's not only three proposal, but it's more than that. There's another one that came out on the internet from somebody from Rockland County that mentions a geographical representation. And that sort of addressed the concern of one of the gentlemen out there who said that people who live in Pennsylvania couldn't possibly know who those candidates are. However, if they were, you know, somebody, one of theirs, then they would know who it is. I have a question for each one of these, the people who made presentation tonight. And I think that the bridge can be filled by these people answering this. And I also want to second Mimi's proposal to have sort of a task force where the people get together and try to see if they can bridge the gap. Would you be in favor of having members be people who, for instance, would be accept to fill a questionnaire or maybe give like $5 as long as we go out and outreach for them?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, all members should be asked to fill a questionnaire. And maybe the requirements for the members who have not participated by money or by participation should be actually to fill this questionnaire thoroughly. Because otherwise, how do we really know who they are? You know, how do we know their contribution, you know, if they're lying or not, you know, and some will argue this is a form of discrimination, but yes, we do have to discriminate. We discriminate all the time here by our programming, and we discriminate by you know, the choices Pacific and WBAI makes every day. So absolutely, you know, we have no idea. I mean, if we knew now who our listeners were, what our membership were, we would have a pretty good idea of, you know, and would not be talking in the abstract, you know, as of right now.
If someone can afford to pay, fine. No, there should be no prohibition as a result of people who cannot afford to pay. It may be hard for some folks to understand. It shouldn't be. We have a very indigent population in this city, and there are people who cannot afford to pay anything. There are people who lose their housing for less than $100. And again, I think it's a poll tax. Secondly, in terms of the actual issue of if people want to fill out questionnaires, that's fine. We live in a time of profiling government information and collection, et cetera. If people do not want to do that, I don't think they should have to. How do you know? Because you have people who represent the, excuse me, you have people who represent, you have people who are representative of their communities. Again, I think it's less individuals and people who represent spheres of activism that we're looking for. And that's how you know what they are. And those communities should be choosing those people if we want the representative board. And that doesn't exclude individuals either.
I think we should stick with the $25 minimum. I've done some polling where I work. I work in a Job Corps Center, which is a facility for low-income young people. And I've asked them, is $25 a lot of money? And it's not. Half of these kids smoke. A pack of cigarettes is $5. They go to concerts. Just on the Friday night program, I think it was Miguel who pointed out that there is a popular singer with some of the Latino immigrant groups who charged $50 to go to a concert, and they went in the thousands. $25 is not too much to ask.
Okay. I'm sorry, we just have to interrupt the process for a while because the way we had it done originally, somebody, Dina, who has to leave now, was supposed to just give you some information and make a pitch for some for donation to help us pay for the place.
Okay, I'm really sorry to interrupt because I understand the flow is more important, but this room costs between $200 and $250 to begin with, and we never know how many people are going to be coming, so we always try and make enough space for as many people as possible. We are going to really ask you to dig deep into your pockets. This is not just for this evening. It's for the continuance of Concerned Friends. We need money so that we can do outreach. We consistently Xerox information and continue to do what we need to do. So we're asking you to please dig deep. I'm really sorry to have to interrupt based on that, but this is an important fact of life. It's basic. The other basic thing that you need to know is that as important as governance and bylaws are, and as much as there's discussion on membership, if there's no outreach into the various communities that we're talking about, then all of this is moot. So it doesn't matter how much we discuss this if people aren't willing to do the work. If you can do 2 hours a week, if you can do 2 hours a month, if you can do one day every so often. I am speaking on behalf of Miguel for the lab. I'm speaking on behalf of Concerned Friends Outreach. I'm speaking on behalf of Paul Saravelle in his outreach. It doesn't matter what type of outreach we're doing. What matters is that you help us do the outreach. I'm passing out two different, they say the same thing. It's to get your name, your telephone number, and email address. If you're willing to give any time to outreach, please sign up. And I'm really sorry to have bothered you.
Okay, can we go on?
Yeah, okay.
Oh, one last outreach piece. Saturday, the 20th, is a huge day in Washington. Unfortunately, Bob forgot to bring the palm cards that we had, which are really important. So he's willing to coordinate people who are going to Washington who want to hand things out on their buses. How many of you are willing to, are going to Washington? So there's a lot of people. Could you see Bob over here and make arrangements for contact to pick up the palm cards, distribute them on your bus, distribute them? What we're finding when we do outreach, up until 2 weeks ago, was that people do not know BAI is back. I know it's hard to believe because we who are involved with it from day to day think the whole world knows what happened. But as we go to conferences every weekend, people are not aware that BAI is even back. So it's really important to do this outreach. Thanks.
There's one more. Sorry, folks.
Okay, one more announcement. We were thinking the other day as we were arguing at another meeting that what we need at BAI is a Pacifica volunteer corps, a BAI volunteer corps, that people don't just come in to volunteer to collect money, but that people come in, that we organize something, come in to get out premiums, to clean the closets, whatever it is, that gives people, both helps the staff get more efficient, and it helps people feel more connected to BAI. So I'm putting out this clipboard, and just put your name, your blah, blah, phone number, email, and we will try to figure it out. Bernard is evidently in favor of this. It says Pacifica Corps, BAI volunteer. Okay? How many people would volunteer a little bit to come and help out? Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. I'm passing this
down. Okay, folks. Anyway, we're going back to the question.
Okay.
As far as I'm concerned, even if the question is directed to one of the presenters, if you need to add something, I think this is okay.
Okay, Howard Branstein. It's not working?
It's not a recording.
Okay.
Talk into it, but it's a tape recording.
Okay. All right, so I'm really struggling with this notion of arriving at some rational, you know, definition of membership and voting. So I really appreciate these presentations. I miss Bertol's, but I thank you for the other two, Paul. I really appreciate your specificity. Clearly, how we, arrive at the nominees, everyone agrees, is going to be critical, whether we have a broadly defined membership, with less restrictions or more narrowly defined membership is something I have to think through a lot. But for the nominees, I think we could all agree there has to be some way to arrive at a very fair process. Now, you mentioned this nominating committee, which is a good idea. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. But I have seen organizations taken over by an elite few who get control of the nominating process or the board, and then they keep, you know, putting up members or friends they know, and in that way they control the organization into the future. We also know, of course, the experience with organizations that are taken over by more outside forces that infiltrate, you know, in a more obvious way, perhaps. But this inside takeover is very insidious and harder, in some ways harder to control. So how do you feel, in addition to that nomination process, how do you feel about petition candidates? That's people, members who would go around and they would have to secure so many petitions from the membership at large to qualify as nominees.
That was part of my proposal. That was an option. And if somebody went before the committee and did not get the endorsement or the nomination, they could still go out and run as a candidate, you know, if they got enough signatures. Along the lines of the KPFA model, which I think is 20 signatures, or it's a very small number of signatures. Almost anybody can run.
I'd like to hear how the other speakers feel about that, too, that the whole nomination process.
I support the nominating body, but I am against the nominating body sponsoring the people that they do find. You know, I mean, that will actually give them the power to kind of perpetuate themselves also. I mean, the whole concept of the nominating body should be to go out there and outreach, go to communities like Mimi mentioned and Paul, and find those candidates. Once they find those candidates and allude them to the fact that we have the WBAI progressive radio station, then those candidates should be on their own. However, I would go further and say that all and each candidate, whether they are chosen by the nominating committee or they get petition, should have equal airtime. If any candidate is given any extra airtime by any producers or for whatever reason, they get disqualified. See, that's the whole idea of the American system. The candidates who have money get elected, and those who do not have money don't even get to participate. We have equal airtime, and this equal airtime will give you a pretty good view and understanding of all the candidates equally, and the gentleman over there would be able to make a decision on who the candidates are with the help of a questionnaire also.
I don't know. I don't particularly agree with the concept of a nominating committee. I want to broaden the franchise. I want the franchise to be more representative of political interests, groupings that have been disenfranchised, et cetera, rather than individuals who are well-intentioned. And I think that in order to accomplish that, a lot more thought needs to go into it, and there needs to be, as a precursor, a broader body and a broader input than the presentations we have here to come up with something. But I think that a nominating committee is very constricted and actually plays in to what you said, which is the squeaky wheels, the most zealous and immersed, tend to perpetuate their own involvement and replicate the look of the institution. And I am very profoundly concerned that that becomes very exclusivist and unrepresentative of the community of people who should be listening to the station.
Thank you. Mitch, by the way, Mitch told me earlier that tomorrow is then Coughlin's birthday. So in case then shows up, we sing the international in whatever language you call it.
Hi, I'm Mitchell Cohn from the Greens. You know, Mimi was absolutely correct, I think, and was the only person who focused on the role of neoliberalism and the international politics that then shaped the way the whole station went and the way the board went. And I think it is true that you can't structure out. We got caught into these obsessive modes, all of us, where we try to structure out things that are really political questions, and structure plays a much smaller part in it. And I think we lose sight of that. So then how do we then embody these political motions? I think that's where we're coming from, into institutionalized forms that could be fluid, but and then have some say in the running of the station and the board. And I actually see a lot of commonality despite all the tension and the petition stake between these things. The only person, though, at the station that I see, and I want to ask if what you think about this idea, that I see is actually organizing the listeners into actual groups, is Gary Null, who has his running group, who has other health groups. And as a result, he has an organized base of people who pay a lot of money and stay active based on basically whatever Gary says. And I think that's a problem as well as it, you know, it's both a problem and an opportunity. And so how do we begin forming the kind of caucuses or listener groups, membership groups, that could then begin to do somewhat of the similar thing? That's a question.
I just want to make a comment on that. The people who listen to Gary don't listen to a lot of them don't listen to anything else on WBAI.
I agree.
Just as points of reference, the station is giving consideration, and that doesn't mean it's picked anybody, but it is given real consideration to creating a position which will be a permanent outreach position in order to mobilize, enfranchise, bring more of the listeners together. That's one thing. It wasn't a good working experience, but it was a concept, and that was to bring women in who were not part of the station regularly, for example, to do a day's programming around women. It could have worked smoother, but nevertheless, it did happen. There also, make no mistake, in one sense, Bernard has a real constituency. They've created real groups because people here don't necessarily see them. Doesn't mean they don't. Olumbe is considered the informal mayor of Harlem and has groups that are far greater than Gary Knoll does in terms of real commitment to work. So Amy's got the college campuses, you know, which kind of are prone at her feet. So there's a lot more happening, but it's a very strategic question, and we haven't always used the airwaves as effectively to mobilize, although I will tell you that whatever percentage comes to April 20th will be there pursuant to the work that's been done on the morning show and some of the other programs as well. But it has to be more self-conscious. But that's an issue. And we need to think of our station in an activist context, the theoretical to inform social activism for social change.
Thank you, Mitch.
But I agree with your...
Well, I'll give you a brief comment. I think that the purpose of the station is to inform, and I don't think that we should try to convert the radio station into a political party or some sort of an organization that's organizing people. I think, you know, it's a radio station, and our role is to get people to listen to that radio station and to, you know, influence programming as we can. And, you know, I think actually one of the greatest needs right now is to make Democracy Now! More accessible. I mean, that to me is the biggest weakness of the station right now, that if you work for a living, you can't listen to Democracy Now!
If you're in school.
I'm not much knowledgeable about what's going on at the station, but I would say that I tend to agree with Mimi's point of view, even though I understand Paul Serville's concern about creating pockets of interest at the station. But we can use this in a different way and actually use the station as a whole to try to bring those people in. You know, Mimi can have a following, Bernard White and Gary Knoll, but we should try to see if we can bring all those people together and have them share, maybe not Gary Knoll, but have them share, you know, and know about all the other, you know, groups. I mean, Amy should use a following to introduce them to maybe Olumbe Bright and so on. You know, that way you have a continuous, you know, exchange of information.
Hi, my name is Steve Brown. I think there's a dilemma in that there's too much fear of a right-wing takeover of the station. It's more likely to be a centrist takeover. We can have a nominating committee of the lab that makes sure that candidates have certain parameters that they must fit into, and that's fine. We should also have self-nomination and people who can get petitions to balance that. On the other hand, it's very possible, very likely, that anyone with a law... Bill Clinton can certainly go out and get a petition and by name recognition certainly become a member of the board. So can Mark Green, Ed Koch, Al D'Amato, any people who are not far right. They can come on the board and be elected. They can become candidates, and they will get elected because of their name recognition. How do you stop that? How do you prevent that? What possible way can you suggest to prevent that?
I don't think that Mark Green would win an election with the WBAI subscribers.
You're wrong.
I don't think they'd vote for him.
You're
They might vote for, what's the other guy's name, the guy who lost, the former head of
Green.
Norm Siegel. Norm Siegel could win a seat, but not Mark Green.
By having how else do you do it, Steve, except by having fluidity of interest, debates, discourse, open airings, access to the station airwaves, and by having a developed theoretical and ideological politic that weeds out any one interest. I mean, to me, the ultimate thing wouldn't be necessarily to weed out Mark Green, although he wouldn't be my cup of tea, but it certainly would be to have more political and radical people. That's why I think the debates, that's why I think the town meetings, that's why I think the community of interest that are both theoretically and activist oriented and that have constituencies where people know who is reliable and what they're immersed in. That's some of the way you do it.
If anybody can vote, then they can each get enough people to vote for them. Debates and airwave time is only to make a candidate known to the audience. These people have already known personalities. They have fame, and they can get 2 or 3 or 4 or 10,000 people to vote for them.
You got to check and balance. You build in recall, and you build in public discourse. That's the only way I think. There's no fail-safe, but I think the idea that the entire board is going to be taken over by this conspiracy of neoliberal forces when there are political forces who are minding the store, and that includes a strong, unionized staff that sees itself as a collective body, which it didn't prior to the coup as well.
I'll answer that question because, believe it or not, I've been thinking about this question for the past 16 months. Every day I hear it from Steve. There are no safe way to completely stop this from happening. But if we look at KPFK in Houston, where the right wing basically had the station for a very long time, you know, as soon as we got rid of them and we put some more progressive programming, right wing is still there, but at the same time, you know, you have the listeners that used to listen came in waves, and they had the most successful fundraising of their lifetime. Okay, now, there are many ways of having checks and balances. At KPFA, you know, you have to be a listener, voter 90 days before the elections. You can actually try to verify who those members belong to. I mean, I'm not suggesting that we do like Utrecht did and pay this company to...
Decision strategy.
So, yeah. But, there are some ways we can check, you know, where the mass votes are coming from. And all I can say is also you will have a percentage of the lab, of the producers, you know, on the board. And then you have recall. And you have a petition that each candidate will sign that they believe in those principles, blah, blah, blah. And then you can recall them. You can legally recall them if the voters, you know, go by two-thirds, whatever percentage you go about recalling them. Does that satisfy you, Steve?
Okay. What we're going to do now, there are still many people who want to ask questions. So we're going to, I know this might make it more difficult, but we're going to take two questions at least. And then having two people answer it might be a bit complicated. Let's try it now.
And could we talk about membership? I think the last time we got together, we talked about membership and who can vote. Let's try to stay on that. Make the question about who can be a member. We have to deal with this other stuff later. It's bad enough, you know, just trying to deal with who can vote.
Can I withdraw? Because I was going to... Okay, I withdraw my question.
I would like to know what the speakers think about my opinions about this. I think picking board members on the basis of race or picking programmers on the basis of race or ethnicity is a very, very bad idea. And I'll tell you why. Because you pick somebody because they're black or they're blue or they're brown or whatever, or they're yellow or they're white. that doesn't guarantee they're going to do a good program, and it does not guarantee that they're going to represent the interests of the group they ostensibly belong to. It does not. Second of all, this is racist. You pick people on the basis of their race or their ethnicity or their sex. That's racism. You may call it reverse racism, but it's still racism. That's what it is. You're not looking at the qualifications of the person to do the job you want them to do. You're simply looking at their skin color. And you don't even know who's black or who's Puerto Rican or who's Spanish or who's Asian. There's no scientific definition. Do they have to be a certain hue to be in that group? It's silly. All right.
Do you have a question?
My question is,
what do you think about that?
Yes, that's exactly it. What do you think about it?
One thing that was said earlier, and Janice pointed out, I mean, people have freedom to discuss whatever they want. However, if we're going to be systematic about this, it's better to try to stick to this theme that we have and then discuss other issues. I don't know if people realize that. A lot of what was talked about and many of the questions have to do more with who's running rather than who's voting. Who the candidates are rather than who are the electors. So anyway.
On the basis of race, that's exactly what you're
doing. I was talking about something else.
Right.
Okay, can we have another question from you? And then you can try to...
Yes, my name is Steve Salco. I heard in one of the presentations a proposal that we should put ballots out all over the city, in supermarkets and union halls and wherever, so that basically anyone who wanted could have access to a ballot. And it occurs to me that we want to encourage as many people as possible to listen to this station, because that's really the only way the station is going to thrive, the station and the network. There are really too few people listening to this station. So we want as many listeners as possible. And from those listeners, over time, we're ultimately going to get subscribers. But it seems to me that simply inviting anyone who wants to fill out a ballot and vote for members of the boards is irresponsible, because people should be allowed to vote if they're somehow committed to the station. And just being able to walk into a supermarket or a post office and pick up a ballot is not a commitment to a station. You don't even know if those people are listening to the station. And I think at a very minimum, only people who are listening to the station should have some say in who is on the board.
What's your question?
So following along Mitchell's suggestion, what do you think about that?
Well, not the one I made. I never suggested supermarkets, although that's not a bad idea. Do I think that there are ways of making the voting process accessible to people that vary from the formula that most people here may be familiar with? Absolutely. That make it easier and more expedient for people, and that's a healthy and progressive thing? Absolutely. Should it be in the Dominican Center in Washington Heights? Hell yes. Should it be in the House of the Lord Church, a center of political activism in Brooklyn? Absolutely. It should be targeted. Should it be in the Gay and Lesbian Center? Yes. And yes, I want to bring in people who are not recycled. I respect the people who listen now, but yes, I want a broad group of people who do not currently listen, and I think they have a right to have a determination in what an essentially political communication vehicle means for their life and what it's going to look like and sound like. And that's what I'd like this station to become, a vehicle for progressive thought, particularly for constituencies that we don't yet represent but who need us desperately and have no other form of representation. Through the same debates that we have here, thank you.
I would definitely be against Mimi's proposal here. I think you have to earn, you have to earn the right to vote. You know, and it's not a punishing statement. You know, if you do not work for something one way or another, if you do not go out of your way, if you do not fight for something, you never appreciate it. How many times do we see kids of rich folks waste the money and do whatever, you know, get into drugs. It's because they have had such an easy life and they have not learned, you know, the hard lessons of life, and they have not appreciated what they have. So we have to find a way to make sure that the listeners, listener sponsors or listeners, become members to a process by which, you know, they become proud of becoming members. That is the only way of assuring that, you know, we have people who care and who get involved.
Well, I would endorse Mimi's idea as far as outreach is concerned. I think we should have flyers and information about WBAI in the House of the Lord Church and in the Dominican Center to inform the constituencies there about that the station exists and to encourage them to listen. But I don't think it's appropriate to have ballots there when you don't know who's going to fill it out and send it in. It's, you know, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Now, because it's 8:45, I'm going to ask you, as the General Assembly, the ultimate power, do we continue this?
No.
Well, he's shaking his head no very strongly. Or do we? Okay. Can we? Can I say? Do you want to continue? Who wants to continue?
Can you say what the alternative?
What about the alternative was to break into groups and discuss the themes that were presented originally. For which we had reserved about an hour, by the way, originally. Now we would have about maybe half an hour to do so. So let me ask again. Yes.
I would like to see other people have a chance to ask their questions or make their comments. But I don't see why the people who made the presentation, who made a full presentation, should necessarily have more time to answer every single point. I don't think it's necessary at this point.
I just want to have a fuller discussion. That was the idea.
The group summarized and give their report.
Okay. Can we... can I see a show of hands? Do people want to continue the format the way it is now?
Who's next online?
Okay. Yes. Okay. Who's in favor of stopping now and having groups discussing, you know, related things? Okay. It's clear that the other position won. Sorry. So let's try.
I just got 50 people now.
Okay, try to keep it concise.
Sorry.
I'd like to ask all three people, plus the audience, okay, which of your model deals with the takeover? I've heard a lot about membership. I heard a lot about elections and vetting. Ask my question. I got two-part question. How does your model of governance stop the people, once they're in power, elected, selected, from changing the bylaws, selling assets, squandering the Pacifica monies, or negatively changing programming? Two, okay, I've heard about, okay, let's see, if they violate, for instance, Andrea Sisco violated, was recalled. She said, the hell with you, I'm not coming back. How do we enforce a recall? And three, how do I know who represents me if it's not geographical?
Those aren't about membership.
I'll just address who do I know represent me?
We kidnap.
Quickly, airtime, equal airtime to all candidates and a lot of airtime. And equal airtime for all candidates, lots of airtimes, and a lot of forums like this where candidates will present their views, and that will be broadcasted in Connecticut or wherever.
I just think a lot of those topics relate to other aspects of the bylaws that we weren't really addressing.
Okay.
And we have six people in line now. Let's stop. This is it. Nobody else.
Okay, I just want to speak to the fact of that who is allowed to vote should be any and all citizens of the United States, in the sense that there should not be a amount or that you have paid to the station or not. Because to me, the important thing is to get people involved in the station, get people involved in hearing the other side of the media. Since we know that the media itself is controlled by moneyed interests, we need BAI, we need people to be get involved in the station, so there should be no amount of money that you have to sponsor into the station to vote. In other words, everyone should have that right. It's not something that should be a privilege to only some or those who want to pay. See, because that's not where the cutting edge comes. I can have a lot of money, be willing to put a lot of money into the station, and then turn it so that it benefits only me. That's my point.
That was a statement. Let me ask something. When you say citizen, do you mean to exclude permanent resident dependents?
No, any and everyone, actually. Okay. Immigrants, too. Okay. Immigrants, too.
Okay.
Okay, I have a couple of points. One is that listeners do not equal members. We can serve the mission of Pacifica, I think, by serving the mission and broadcasting to listeners. This does not make them members. We don't have to make every listener members in order to fulfill the mission. So I'd like to ask a general question that has to be considered by all of us, if not candidates running. How are you going to distinguish listeners from members? The question of recall is a real issue. And it is difficult under proportional choice voting to recall members. However, I'm asking people who would consider themselves either on the present board or candidates for the future board, would you consider writing into the bylaws some provision that would, for instance, prohibit any member being threatened with recall or whose station is recalling him or her from keep that person from voting until the issue is settled, which could be a very long, drawn-out process?
Can I clarify, are you talking about a lab member or just a member of WBAI?
Well, either the lab or the national. I mean, under proportional choice voting, it is true that it's...
You're not, when you say member, you don't mean members of the station as...
No, I'm sorry, I meant lab members. To recall lab members, either national board or local, would we consider writing something into the bylaws that would protect us from a rogue member while we were waiting for them to be recalled, which could take a very long time? Another question I have is the question of the nominating committee. I firmly think a nominating committee should do nothing more than make sure their paperwork is in, that everybody running for a position has got the requisite signatures, whether we decide that that's 10 or 100 or 200. And to do anything more than that turns it into a politically correct vetting organization. And then my question is, who on earth would you like to pick to be members of that committee? I imagine the people who are in favor of it would like to be on it themselves, which is exactly what I'm afraid of. But I'd like to know how they intend to choose such a committee and make that committee neutral.
Who's going to elect those people? Who's going to choose?
That's right. Who's going to elect them and who's going to be, how are they going to be responsive for that? And yes, I think so. Thank you. I'll get at the end of the line and finish up.
All right. I'm not sure if I have a question or not, but one of the problems I'm having with this whole discussion right now is that we haven't really, and I don't raise this to suggest that this has been unimportant or that we should put it aside, but I think it's unfortunate in a way that we didn't first put on the agenda what we think the role of a local board is. Because what are we electing people for? To, you know, what jobs we want them to do might have some relationship to how the whole election process happens, and including not only who can run, you know, what the criteria is for candidates are, but who the electorate is. So we do need to think about that. And I know that there are differences, that some people talk about local advisory boards and some people talk about local governing boards, right? And there are different models there. So that's a whole other issue that we really need to discuss. On the question, though, of the electorate, of who gets to vote, I don't agree with Berthold's formulation that you have to earn the right to vote. I think that's not the way we should be thinking about this. I also don't agree that every listener and every potential listener should be eligible to vote. I think that there's some other way we need to approach this, and that for me anyway, it's a question of trying to find ways to involve listeners in the station, and it's through your involvement that you get to vote. And that involvement obviously can be money. That's the way it usually is in this culture, right? You give money, you have the right to vote and do whatever else you want to do. But I think on that category, it should be as little as, you know, as we want to make it. You know, $2, you know, whatever. That, the money category, it seems to me, can be as little and as, you know, small as we need it to be. But the other thing is in volunteering. And it seems to me there it needs to be as broad and as expansive. Not as narrow, but as broad and as expansive as it could be, so that it could be as simple as calling the station and asking for 20 copies of folio so you could pass it out to your neighbors. And that, therefore, you've showed some involvement with the station. I do think that we need to find some way to engage people, because that's really what it's about. It's not about a sacrifice of the station or earning the right to vote. It's about involvement with the station. And we need to be as inclusive in defining, you know, categories that meet that challenge. That's all.
Quickly to address this point, when I said earn, when you said, for example, calling to ask for 10 copies of the folio to be sent to your house, I would call that earning the right to be
involved.
Yeah, well, but the fact that to make the commitment to actually call the station and ask for 10 folios, you know, I would call that, you know, earning the right to vote. And secondly, she's right about the idea, and we're not discussing that now, about the idea of defining what is the role of the station board. That's extremely important. You know, we are trying to define who are the members who are going to vote, and we do not know what they're going to vote for. The lab has the definition of the function of the lab. KPFA also has some, and then I put them together, and I also have, we, group of us, put them together, and then we had a bunch of wishful thinking that I would put on the WBI bylaws, and everybody can look at.
Okay. I think I just want to say real fast that the key concept as to who should be entitled to vote is the concept of membership. That you become a member of WBAI, and how do you do that? Through participation. So, but that the notion of membership, I think, is key.
Now, hi, my name is Tom Gregg. I'm from New Jersey. This question is mainly directed toward Paul Surival, although anybody else can answer it. Now, it's about, in his proposal, he discussed affirmative action. And affirmative action is necessary in the United States in the context of the racial oppression that's existed. It's an equalizing force. But is it required in an elections process? A country I know where they do that is Lebanon, where the Christians have to get affirmative action in order. I'm not sure, but I know that they have that there. So the question is, why specifically do you argue for affirmative action in the elections process at WBAI?
Yes, I want to start by asking the question to Mimi Rosenberg, that would she please, before we leave this subject, refocus your proposal back to us of a task force and just what you envision that task force to be, because of the various models that I heard. Now, this is a comment. Yours was the one that seemed most critically to address concerns that I have and a number of colleagues in the communities of color, people in Community for Progressive Radio and elsewhere have, about the very paradigm that we use in formulating how we choose who our representatives are going to be. There seems to be like a fundamental question of whether or not this particular group, by simply advertising, even through maybe some additional means than we have normally done, will get the kind of participation and inclusion of those groups that, according to our political statements and our interpretations of the mission, we're trying to address. That is, communities that have been oppressed historically, people who are structurally kept out of the mainstream of power, and whose interests politically on the local, national, and international areas we seem to have more unity with. How do these people begin to be actually addressed as an important element in the choosing of and influencing of what goes on in Pacifica? To me, there's going to require some different kind of paradigm. It can't be figured out in one evening as to whether or not broad dissemination in supermarkets is the solution versus consistently organized outreach meetings, community meetings in a variety of neighborhoods, perhaps. A variety of things may be part of the solution. But at this point, it seems that it'd be most appropriate if some group of us could focus on how we might get further into having some form follow the function that Leslie and others have, you know, appropriately said we still have to determine for what this grouping is.
Thank you, sir. Hi, my name is Steve Seltzer, and
as far as why is it necessary to have affirmative action, my main motivation for that was that I saw this as being a continuation of what the lab has already done, that the lab consciously implemented affirmative action in recruiting its membership. And so I see that this is something that must be mandated to continue. And then you also have the historical experience at KPFA where the proportion, and then I was going to comment on this about Berthold's proposal, just through proportional voting alone, they were not able to elect 50% people of color. They had to actually use the affirmative action provision to trump and bypass the voting, so that it's necessary if you want to get that type of composition on the lab. It seems as though it's probably necessary to mandate it.
This is really in response to the question about affirmative action and to the gentleman in the white T-shirt. There is nothing that is more important to me within the context of this society, politically, and within the context of the historic problem of the left community, than addressing the question of the historic bias that exists and the denial of that bias. And within that context, I believe actually it takes more than affirmative action in the formulation that was put out by KPFA, and that's why I'm talking about issues such as supermajority, et cetera. But I know that the body here is unprepared and unequal to the task, not again because of lack of intentions, but because it doesn't represent those communities of oppressed people and can't make those determinations for it. So within that context, moving away from that, there has to be an affirmative way of bringing oppressed people into our sphere of involvement in pre-election stages so they can determine how the station will eventually service better those communities. I go to Anthony's proposal, and I think it's virtually a motion, and really request that if people would like to, and I'd like to formalize it, that there be a task force towards the end of addressing better ways of figuring out how to represent underrepresented bodies, which were addressed somewhat over the years, the last 8 years, by Samori Marksman, but have to be done much better, and which the listeners' movement never fully did, with all due respect and contribution to where it's at. It now needs to move to another level of representation, and it's not there, and it has to recognize that, and also to take into account some of the creative thinking that I think Leslie brought to what constitutes an involvement in the station and creative ways of seeking people's involvement based on who they are and where they're coming from, income-wise, physically, intellectually, and so on. So I hope we can turn Anthony's motion into a legitimate motion of creating a task force tonight for that end of seeking real, conclusive, and not exclusionary representation, because we are not there yet.
Okay.